Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are getting into a really foundational text, one that basically reshaped how people think about global politics. It's Kenneth Waltz's Theory of International Politics, published back in 1979.
Yeah, this is a big one. I mean, if you've ever wondered why international relations seems, well, snuck in these cycles of competition, conflict, states worrying about security, even when everything else seems to change, leaders, technology, governments, this book offers a powerful answer.
Right. Waltz asked this fundamental question. Why is there such remarkable continuity? Why does the basic game of world politics look so similar across centuries?
Exactly. You look at, say, the rise of democracy or globalization, all these things we think should change the world.
And yet that underlying tension, the struggle for security, yeah, it just persists.
And Waltz's big insight, the hook for us today, is that the answer isn't really about the specific leaders or the ideologies or even the type of government inside a state.
No, it's about the system itself. The overarching structure of international politics that kind of forces states, all states, into these predictable, sometimes tragic, patterns of behavior.
So our mission today is really to unpack that structural way of seeing the world, understand its logic, why it was so groundbreaking, and frankly, why it's still incredibly relevant for making sense of what's happening today.
Okay, let's start with the man himself, Kenneth Waltz. Who was he?
Kenneth Neil Waltz lived from 1924 to 2013. He's basically seen as the founder of near realism, or you might hear it called structural realism, taught at top places like Berkeley, Columbia.
But his ideas weren't just academic abstractions, were they?
Not at all. And this is crucial, I think. He was a veteran, served in World War II and the Korean War. And you can really feel how that experience probably shaped his view of conflict. Very pragmatic, quite sober, maybe even a bit cynical about achieving permanent peace.
Yeah, he wasn't banking on wishful thinking. He wanted a systematic explanation. And this 1979 book, Theory of International Politics, it wasn't his first crack at this, right?
No, exactly. He'd written Man, the State, and War way back in 1959. That's where he laid out his famous three images, or like three levels you could look at to explain war. The individual level, leaders, human nature. The state level, type of government, ideology. And the system level.
So the 1979 book is basically the full deep dive into that third image, the system.
That's it. It's the systematic development of the third image argument. And what's really key here is how deliberately he broke from what came before, specifically classical realism.
You mean thinkers like Morgenthau?
Right. Morgenthau and others tended to root conflict in, you know, flawed human nature, the inherent drive for power. Waltz thought that was too subjective, maybe. He wanted something more scientific, more structural.
He changed the whole analogy, didn't he?
He did. He said classical realism was like trying to understand why a company acts the way it does just by looking at the CEO's personality. Waltz said, no, you have to look at the market the company operates and the competitive pressures.
So the firm is the state.
And the market is the international system. You can't grasp state behavior without first understanding the pressures of that system.
Okay, that sets up the core idea of the book perfectly. His starting point is basically saying previous theories got it wrong. He called them reductionist. What does he mean by that?
He meant they tried to explain big international outcomes like war or peace by reducing the cause down to something inside the state. So, you know, blaming World War I on German militarism or conflict on aggressive leaders or specific economic systems.
Which sounds like common sense.
All right.
That's usually where we look first.
It is. But Waltz's point was powerful. If internal factors are the main cause, how do you explain the continuity? If aggressive leaders cause war, why does competition continue when you have peaceful leaders? If dictatorships are the problem, why do democracies still find themselves in security competitions? Reductionism, he argued, just couldn't explain why the basic patterns persist across totally different kinds of states and eras.
So if the answers aren't inside the states, we have to look at the structure they all operate within. What defines that structure for Waltz?
He boils it down to two fundamental, pretty much unchanging features. The first, and maybe the most important, is anarchy.
And we need to be careful with that word, right? Doesn't mean chaos or disorder.
Exactly. It simply means the absence of a higher authority above states. There's no world government, no global police force you can call, no international court that states have to obey.
No global 911. So every state is ultimately on its own for survival, was the second feature.
The second defining feature is the distribution of capabilities, which is just a fancy way of saying how power, military power, economic strength, technology, that sort of thing, is spread out among the major states.
Okay, so is it multipolar, with lots of great powers? Bipolar, like the Cold War with two superpowers? Or maybe unipolar, with just one dominant power?
Precisely. And the so what of all this is huge. Waltz argues this structure defined by anarchy and the way power is distributed acts like a powerful force, almost like gravity in physics. It constrains states, it shapes their behavior.
And it forces all of them, whether they're democratic or authoritarian, rich or poor, to prioritize survival and security above almost everything else.
That's the core logic. If you want to understand big international patterns, you have to look at the constraints the system imposes.
Let's dig a bit deeper into how this structure actually works. Waltz was really trying to build a proper theory, wasn't he? Not just describe things.
Absolutely. He felt international relations was full of what he called laws. You know, observed patterns, like democracies tend not to fight each other. But he argued it lacked a real theory, a simple, coherent framework that could explain why those patterns happen.
He wanted that elegant simplification, the core mechanism. And it starts with what he calls the ordering principle.
Right. He contrasts domestic politics with international politics. Inside a country, the ordering principle is hierarchy. You have a government above the citizens making laws, enforcing them.
But internationally?
Internationally, the ordering principle is anarchy. States are formally equal, there's no higher authority, and this anarchy forces states into what he calls a self-help system.
Because if no one else is going to guarantee your safety,
you have to do it yourself. Which brings us to the three parts he uses to precisely define the structure in Chapter 5. We've got the ordering principle, anarchy. What's next?
Okay, the second part. This one can be a bit tricky. Functional differentiation of units.
It sounds complex, but the idea is actually quite simple. Think about society inside a state. You have different institutions doing different jobs, right? Hospitals heal, schools teach, businesses produce. They're functionally differentiated.
Okay.
But Waltz argues that internationally, states are not functionally differentiated. Why? Because under anarchy, every single state, regardless of its internal system or wealth, has to perform the same basic vital functions to survive.
Like what?
Like providing for its own security, managing its economy, conducting diplomacy, raising taxes. Because they all must do these core tasks themselves in a self-help world, he says they are functionally alike. The only way they really differ structurally is in their capabilities, how much power they have.
So the U.S. and, say, North Korea, despite being vastly different internally, are forced by the system to worry about the same fundamental things. Security, relative power, potential threats. Their function in the system is similar.
Exactly. And because the ordering principle, anarchy, is constant, and the units, states, are functionally alike, that leaves only one part of the structure that actually changes and can explain major shifts in international politics.
Which is the third part. The distribution of capabilities, how power is spread out.
That's the key variable for Waltz. Changes from multipolarity to bipolarity, for instance, fundamentally alter the dynamics of the system.
And this whole self-help system, driven by anarchy, inevitably leads to one of the most famous and frankly depressing concepts in IR, the security dilemma. Can you walk us through that again? The neighbor analogy is so helpful.
Yeah, it really clarifies it. Imagine you have two neighbors, neither wants trouble. Neighbor A decides, just for safety, to build a higher fence and install security cameras. Purely defensive in their mind.
Okay.
But neighbor B sees this. B can't know for sure why A is doing it. Is it really just defense? Or is A planning something? Maybe A wants to be able to act aggressively later without B being able to respond. So neighbor B, feeling less secure, builds an even higher fence, maybe gets a guard dog.
And now both are spending more resources, feeling more suspicious, and are arguably less secure than before, even though neither started out wanting conflict.
Precisely. That's the security dilemma. Actions taken purely for defense are often interpreted by others as threatening, leading to a spiral of mistrust and arms buildups. It's tragic because it can happen even when no state actually has aggressive intentions. It's the structure of anarchy forcing this outcome.
It really takes the morality out of it, doesn't it? It's just the logic of the system. So, given this dilemma, how do states try to cope? What's the mechanism?
The core mechanism is balancing power. Waltz argues this isn't just a policy states choose. It's a tendency baked into the system itself. States react to concentrations of power that threaten them.
And they do this in two main ways.
Right. internal balancing, which means building up your own power, strengthening your military, growing your economy, and external balancing, which is forming alliances with other states to counter the threat.
And the classic example showing how powerful balancing is, overriding even deep ideological differences.
This is World War II. You have the communist Soviet Union teaming up with the capitalist US and UK. Why? Not because they suddenly admired each other's systems.
No, it was because Nazi Germany was the biggest, most immediate power threat on the continent.
Exactly. They balanced against the concentration of power that threatened their survival. Survival trumped ideology. That's pure Waltzian logic.
And this cold logic extends beyond military stuff, right?
Yeah.
He had things to say about economics, too.
He did, in Chapter 7. He took aim at the liberal idea that economic interdependence countries trading a lot with each other leads to peace.
Which is a very common argument, even today. More trade, more connections means less war.
But Waltz disagreed. He argued that in an anarchic system, interdependence creates vulnerabilities. If you depend on another state for, say, critical resources or technology, that state gains leverage over you.
Leverage they could potentially use against you in a crisis.
Right. So for Waltz, security concerns almost always override potential economic gains. States might deliberately choose less economic efficiency or avoid certain trade relationships if it means reducing a dangerous dependency. Security comes first.
This sets up his really famous and maybe controversial argument in Chapter 8 about which type of system is more stable.
Ah, yes, the bipolar stability argument. He contrasts multipolarity with bipolarity.
Okay, so multipolarity, think pre-World War I, Europe, lots of great powers. Why did he see that as unstable? It seems like more players might mean more flexibility.
Waltz argued multipolarity is prone to instability for a couple of reasons. First, alliances are constantly shifting and complex. It's harder to know who your friends and enemies really are. Second, there's a high risk of miscalculation.
Like in 1914.
Exactly. Did Germany really think Britain would join the war? Who was the main threat? It gets diffused. And third, multipolarity encourages buck passing. States might see a rising aggressor, but hope someone else will bear the cost of stopping them. That delay can be fatal.
Okay, so then bipolarity, like the Cold War, just the U.S. and the Soviet Union as the two main players, that always felt incredibly dangerous.
It was high tension, absolutely. But Waltz argued it was structurally more stable. Why? Because the threats were clear. Everyone knew who the main adversary was.
There was no ambiguity.
None. And crucially, there was no one else to pass the buck to. The two superpowers knew they had to manage their rivalry directly and hopefully cautiously because the stakes were existential. He pointed to the long period without direct great power war after 1945 as evidence for this structural stability.
Okay, that's a lot of mechanics.
Yeah.
Let's try to pull out the key themes for you, the listener. If you're going to take one or two big ideas away from Waltz, what should they be?
I think the first absolutely central one is the primacy of structure, the constraints and incentives coming from the international system from anarchy and the distribution of power are usually more important in explaining state behavior than what's going on inside the state.
So a democracy and a dictatorship facing the exact same powerful neighbor will likely be pushed toward very similar actions like building up defenses or seeking allies, right?
Precisely. Structure often overrides internal character. Second key takeaway, anarchy is the permissive cause of war.
Meaning?
Meaning the lack of a global government doesn't make war happen, but it allows war to happen. It makes force always an option. It explains why, even when everyone says they want peace, competition and the potential for conflict just don't go away.
It's the underlying condition that makes security such a constant worry.
And third, balancing is inevitable, or at least it's the dominant tendency. States don't usually bandwagon, they don't typically join the strongest side. Instead, they tend to align against rising concentrations of power to maintain their own security and the system's equilibrium. It's a kind of law of political physics for Waltz.
You know, Waltz wasn't just systematic. He was also incredibly quotable. Some of his lines really crystallized the whole theory.
Oh, definitely. They pack a punch, like this one. Self-help is necessarily the principle of action in an anarchic order.
Boom. That just delays it out, doesn't it? If there's no one to rely on, you have to rely on yourself. That's the starting point for everything else.
And flowing from that, in anarchy, security is the highest end. Why do even rich, peaceful countries spend fortunes on militaries? Because survival comes first. You can't pursue wealth or anything else if you don't exist.
But he was also careful not to overstate it. It's not pure determinism.
Right. That's captured in this quote. The structure of the system acts as a constraining and disposing force. It is not a case of determinism, but of pressure and possibility.
So the system doesn't dictate every single move a state makes?
Yeah.
It doesn't pull the strings like a puppet master?
No, but it shapes the environment. It limits the choices, makes certain actions rational or necessary, and makes others very risky. It creates strong pressures and defines the realm of possibility.
Which leads to his observation about history.
Yeah. The texture of international politics remains highly constant, patterns recur, and events repeat themselves endlessly. Why? Because the underlying anarchic structure hasn't changed. Technology evolves, ideologies shift, but the fundamental game of self-help and balancing persists.
Okay, so bringing this home for you listening, how can you actually use this Waltzian lens when you're looking at the world today?
Well, one obvious way is analyzing enduring rivalries. Take U.S.-China relations. You can look beyond the latest trade dispute or fiery statement.
Right. You can see it through this structural framework.
Exactly. You see two major powers rising and established in an anarchic system. Waltz would say their competition is almost inevitable, driven by mutual fears about relative power shifts and the basic insecurity of the system, regardless of who is president or what specific issue is hot this week.
It also gives you a healthy dose of skepticism, maybe, towards overly optimistic claims.
Definitely. When you hear arguments that, you know, more democracy or more global trade will automatically lead to permanent peace, Waltz's theory reminds you of the structural elephant in the room, anarchy. As long as that persists, the basic logic of self-help, security competition, and balancing will likely remain powerful forces.
So it's a caution against expecting too much.
It is. For policymakers, it suggests that grand designs for fundamentally transforming the world order often fail because they crash against the hard realities of the anarchic structure. Maybe the most realistic goal is often prudent management of power, maintaining stability through balancing, rather than trying to eliminate power politics altogether.
For me, thinking about this again, what really stands out is just how powerful a simple parsimonious theory can be. Waltz cuts through so much complexity, all the different leaders, events, crises, and offers this core structural logic that explains this deep, persistent continuity in world politics over centuries. It's like getting x-ray glasses for international relations.
That's a great way to put it. It's a sobering perspective, for sure. It tells us there are real limits to cooperation and peace imposed by the system itself. But it's also incredibly insightful. If you want to understand why states act the way they do, Waltz forces you to realize that the context, the anarchic structure, the distribution of power is often far more important than the specific character of the states involved. It's less about the players, more about the unforgiving rules of the game they're forced to play.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.